keeping the Canaanite presence within our hearts not only causes us not to be like Jesus, but it stops the desire to be righteous altogether. Sin will corrupt to destruction our friendship with God. That's what the Canaanites did. The presence of these people in the land, because they were not driven out, caused the Jews to learn about their gods, to tolerate their gods, to embrace their gods, to promote their gods, until finally God himself had to deal with them. Consider this. The voice of unbelief, it is only a thought away all the time.
This is Cross Reference Radio with our pastor and teacher, Rick Gaston. Rick is the pastor of Calvary Chapel, Mechanicsville. Don't forget to stay with us after today's message to hear more information about Cross Reference Radio, specifically how you can get a free copy of this teaching. Now, here's Pastor Rick in the book of Joshua, chapter 17, verse 17, with part one of our message entitled, Driving Out Sin.
Joshua's demand for courage without lowering the standards of God in the midst of an exchange between the children of Joseph and Joshua. They were dissatisfied with God's provisions. They didn't like what they were getting, and so they tried to get something else. And we should read about that. We begin in verse 14 of Joshua 17. Then the children of Joseph spoke to Joshua, saying, "Why have you given us only one lot and one share to inherit, since we are a great people, inasmuch as the Lord has blessed us until now?" So Joshua answered, "If you are a great people, then go up to the forest country and clear a place for yourself there in the land of the Pezerites and the giants, since the mountains of Ephraim are too confined for you." But the children of Joseph said, "The mountain country is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites who dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both those who are of Beth Shean and its towns, and those who are of the valley of Jezreel." Of course, that is when Joshua responds to them, "Indeed, you are a great people. And if you are such a great people, you need to get up there and conquer them. Take those iron chariots away from them and clear a forest for yourself." But reviewing this briefly, we find that, as we mentioned in verse 14, they were dissatisfied and they were a bit inflated in their opinion of themselves. As mentioned, we are a great people. It may be something that's so, but it might not be a good idea to say it to the one whom you're seeking to have lower the standard on your behalf. And then there was this desire to not work. In verse 15, as Joshua's response, "If you are a great people, then go to the forest country and clear a place for yourself." They didn't want to do that. And then in verse 16, Joshua speaks to them, well, they respond, with mountains being in their way, taking space from them. Too much trouble to clear out those with the chariots. And again, verse 17, Joshua's resolved. In other words, he's not budging. He counters and he encourages them. His standards are high because they are the standards of God. God is the one that has assigned the portions to the tribes. Now, I might add that this is Manasseh and Ephraim. They are descendants of Joseph, who was one of his 12 sons. Half the tribe of Manasseh received an allotment east of Jordan. This is for you Bible students. Those of you who don't know the Bible, you'll just have to bear with me for a moment. But to the east of Jordan, half the tribe of Manasseh received a very large tract of territory. And here now, in the promised land itself, Ephraim and Manasseh are sort of sharing now this section that they are being given, and they're saying, "It doesn't work for us." And Joshua is saying, "I understand that, so you're going to have to fight for it, because we're not going to change it from the standards that has been given to us by God." Now, all of this for us pictures for us the encouragement and the insistent from God to rid our hearts of sin. See, the Canaanites that are sitting on these tracts of land represent, in type, the sin that sits in the track of our heart, that keeps us from possessing the blessings of God. And so this morning's sermon is an address to our posture in Christ. It is personal. We're not being told these things so that we can go tell someone else. It is more so that we can address ourselves. It is our stance against the attitude of sin within us. Listen to the words of Moses in Deuteronomy 20, speaking about this very day that the Jews are now dealing with in the time of Joshua, Moses being dead at the time of our text, but looking backwards, when you go out to battle against your enemies and see horses and chariots and people more numerous than you, do not be afraid of them, for the Lord your God is with you, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. So it shall be, when you are on the verge of battle, that the priest shall approach and speak to the people. And he shall say to them, Hear, O Israel, today you are on the verge of battle with your enemies. Do not let your heart faint. Do not be afraid. Do not tremble or be terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. Well, I'm standing here as the priests were saying to the congregation the very same things, using the biblical record to make the points, to encourage us all, to drive out the sin that possesses the land within us. It is a spiritual strength which drives out sin in our own life. The Jewish response to God delivering them from the slavery in Egypt was to conquer the land, was to be instruments of judgment upon the Canaanites because their iniquity had reached proportions to which God said this can no longer continue. That's how it was in the day of Noah. It is how it was in Sodom and Gomorrah. And it is now how it is in the land of Canaan. Our response as Christians, though, to the grace of God is to drive the sin out. Oh, what do we do? God dies for us and his son Jesus Christ on the cross. What's our part? Our response is to drive the sin out, to enter into fellowship with God, to side with him against those things that have caused so much grief and struggle in life throughout the ages. Our inheritance is a Christ-like nature. But in pursuit of this Christ-like nature that we sing about, that we tell others about, that we love so much, we find that the positions have been fortified by sin against us to keep us from laying hold of this nature, causing us to be distracted or to give up or to sort of settle with the sin around us, to judge others and stop judging ourselves. And so I want to encourage those of us who struggle for this inheritance, this nature of Christ, and yet seem unable to ever prevail. If that is you this morning, hopefully you will leave here encouraged and ready again to resume the driving away of the Canaanites in your heart, the sin. I also want to address those who are tempted to make peace with the sin in their heart or our hearts, not wanting to remove myself from the struggle also. I want to encourage us to not lose heart, to not become comfortable. I do not plan to burden any of us with guilt, but to cheer us on, to again revisit those things that are so special to us. You see, the iron chariots, the giants also, as mentioned in verse 15, the land of the Pezerites and the giants, the forests, the iron chariots, the giants, the mountains, all of these things, obstacles in our own lifetime. As we go out to follow the Lord, we find these come against us also. You've been a Christian any length of time, you have no problem seeing the parallels. Some sin, perhaps, that has been forged into your life over the years that refuses to budge, determined to dwell. Look with me at Joshua 17, verse 12. Yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites were determined to dwell in the land. This is what we're addressing, the sin in our hearts, which is determined to dwell. And it comes in so many forms, a bitter spirit, an unforgiving spirit, a lack of faith, critical spirit that's always judging someone else, unfriendliness, various forms of lust for everything that Jesus has forbidden. Or perhaps there is a forest that exists between the nature of Christ and us. And it is becoming easier to simply ignore it. then try to fell the trees and remove the stumps. Or, my favorite, the rock-dodging giants. You see, Goliath didn't dodge the rock of David, but the giants in my life seem to have learned how to dodge the rocks. I hurl the stones at them, and they seem to move out the way. And I run out of ammo, and I have to get up close. And it becomes a hand-to-hand combat, kind of a situation for me. And of course, the mountains that seem to be uphill both ways all the time. And yet Christ does not seem moved by any of these things. He sort of expects us. Well, no, sort of. He does expect us to continue to move forward, to drive them out. Verse 13 of Joshua 17. And it happened when the children of Israel grew strong. Now, pause there. We would think now that they're strong, the victory is going to be won. But that's not what happens. They grew strong, that they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not utterly drive them out. They made a treaty with them. They're tired of this. I'm sick of the bloodshed. I'm sick of the war and the struggle. We're no longer threatened by you, and we're not going to fight you to the death to get you out of here. How about we just make you work for us? This is a trap. And Israel paid for that to this very day. How does it translate for us? Well, let's consider this. The Canaanite presence sought to keep the promise of God unreal to the people of God. So long as those Canaanites dwelled in that land, regardless of what they were doing or not doing, they held the promises of God away from the people. This is what irritated David so much when he became king. Why he was so aggressive in trying to rid the land of these people, Saul also to some degree. But that Canaanite presence sought to keep the promise of God unreal to the people of God, and we know about that. Because sin in our own lives will cause us to not want to serve, to not want to share our faith, to not be the evangelist. We begin to tolerate sin, and that keeps the reality of God away, and that is very dangerous. When God does not seem real to the Christian, big trouble is coming. When, unless you're fighting it, because you see, God can allow us and does allow us to enter into places where he does not seem real, but we fight. We continue to pray. We continue to love him. We continue to serve and to read his word. That's combat. That is driving sin out. But when we begin to doubt, say, I'm not so sure that this is really true. I'm not sure that the God of the Bible is the only true God. Maybe there is another way. When these thoughts start creeping in, you understand it is the Canaanite presence. Because you did not drive them out. Because we may have thought to have made them servants for us. We find out that they still are at war with us. They're not looking to surrender. And keeping the Canaanite presence within our hearts not only causes us not to be like Jesus, but it stops the desire to be righteous altogether. Sin will corrupt to destruction our friendship with God. And that's what the Canaanites did. The presence of these people in the land, because they were not driven out, caused the Jews to learn about their gods, to tolerate their gods, to embrace their gods, to promote their gods, until finally God himself had to deal with them. Consider this. The voice of unbelief, it is only a thought away all the time. Numbers chapter 13. This is the solution. Regardless of what you're going through in your life, this, what I'm saying, is the solution to all your problems. If you come to church to try to hear the pastor say, oh, don't worry, it's going to be okay, then you're setting yourself up for great disappointment, disillusionment. We come to church, we assemble, we come together because we are God's people and because we understand the system he has put in place. And we want to enter into that system because if he has ordained it, it is right and it will bless me. When I seek the Lord, when I look to fulfill his exhortations and his commandments, I understand every single time without exception, I am lined up for a blessing from him. But when I put me first, when I look for God to just deal with my problems, when he becomes sort of my genie in a Bible, the entire system breaks down. But this takes determination, fortitude, courage. It takes a hard head, in a sense, to properly serve the Lord. A hard head against that which distracts us, which seduces us, lures us away. The voice of doubt, as heard in Numbers chapter 13, therein, we'll take verse 32. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Well, you know, I would like to capture a giant or two. I've got gutters I could use them to clean out. I have a list of tasks. But we're not supposed to capture them. We're supposed to destroy them. It's so easy to lower the standard. It is so easy to be weak. It is so easy to just stop. But do we understand how much it costs to do that? Do we understand what it costs to be weak? It comes with a price. Nothing's really free. And so that Christian, if this is you, if you have learned, if you have trained yourself to be weak, you're going to pay. And it doesn't have to be that way. There is always the opportunity to change direction with the Lord so long as there is life within us. They did not drive out the Canaanites. Let's take a view through the scriptures. First, Joshua 16, verse 10. Joshua 16, verse 10. "And they did not drive out the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites to this day and have become forced laborers." You see, when they put together the book of Joshua, they did not follow strict chronology. They would sometimes share events and then later go in and fill in the details. And it makes it a little difficult to follow the story sometime. And the reason why I point that out to you is because chapter 16, of course, preceding chapter 17, tells us the end result, and then chapter 17 goes back and begins to fill in some of the blanks. The entire book of Judges is the book of defeat because of Israel's disobedience and not getting rid of those whom God had commanded to drive out. Judges chapter 1, verse 27. "However, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shean." We heard that word already once this morning. And that is a tag for us to understand it is the same story. "And its villages," or Taanach, "and its villages," or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages, for the Canaanites were determined to dwell in that land. They were infested. They had allowed them to stay in one place, and they ended up in many places. You know, give them an inch, they take a yard. The idea here is that they did not drive them out, and as such, everywhere they turned, they were surrounded by the potential of an army within their own land to overthrow them. And that is how it is with sin. If you stop, if we stop fighting sin, it will begin to inhabit the villages until it takes over completely. Joshua, however, himself, in Joshua 11, verse 9, gave the example. Verse 9, "So Joshua did to them as the Lord had told him. He hamstrung their horses and burned their chariots with fire." That's what he thought of chariots. They could be overcome. They could be beaten. They could be subdued. And so again, the book of Judges shows the cost of failing to drive out, of allowing the sin to remain. Numbers chapter 33. These, again, are parallels. They are illustrated lessons from the lives of people who existed once in this world. The lessons have been preserved for us. The seriousness of the call upon the Christian to not lose heart, to stay at it. Numbers 33, verse 55, God speaking to them, "But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall be that those whom you let remain shall be irritants in your eyes, and thorns in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land where you dwell. And that is what happened, and that is also what happens. God warns that if you allow these things to remain, you will be irritated and you will be stuck. Now, we understand that we will not be in this life entirely, absolutely successful in driving out everything that blocks us from the nature of Christ. But the reward is in the fight. And the defeat is in the surrender, is in not fighting any longer. It's becoming sort of casual about the presence of these things which God has prohibited. Joshua as an example, Caleb as another. Joshua chapter 14, in verses 11 and 12, we read of Caleb, who has set the example for these children of Joseph. There, Joshua 15, verse 14, Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak from there. He was a giant. His people were giants. Sheshai, Ahimah, Talmai, the children of Anak. Then he went up from there to the inhabitants of Debir, formerly the name of Debir was Kiriath Sefer. You didn't need to hear all of that. And the story goes on until his daughter, Aksa, comes to him and says to her father, "Give me a blessing." And he gave her the blessing. She wanted the blessing of springs of water for the land that he had allowed her to take. And he gave her upper and lower springs. And the point is, had Caleb just given up, the blessing would not have developed to his children, to those coming after him. What would happen if the church stopped driving out sin? Well, we can just go take a trip down the street and find out, can we not? Many places in this country, there are churches that have stopped driving out the sin. They have instead decided to downsize the Word of God, to make folks feel comfortable in their sin as opposed to comfortable in the struggle against sin. What the secret was to Caleb and to Joshua was that they were dependent upon God and therefore independent of all others. There belongs to the Christian life this zone, which we find this friendship, this kinship with God of the universe. And there is a great strength and independence that comes along with it. It's not arrogance. It's not a will to be alone. It doesn't create a reckless spirit. But there is a resolve that is born in the life of one who is born again, who is applying the lessons of the Scripture. There is this event that creates this defiance, this refusal to ever feel alone or defeated, because they know the Lord is always with them. Psalm 112, verses 7 and 8. This is the attitude that was found in men like Joshua and Caleb. This is the attitude that is found in the New Testament saints, even after the apostles, even to this very day. He will not be afraid of evil tidings. His heart is steadfast, trusting in the Lord. His heart is established. He will not be afraid until he sees his desire upon his enemies, the Canaanites, defeated, knocked down and destroyed. And yet, there are closed Bibles in the lives of those who once were very vibrant, very diligent in their service, very astute, who gave attention to the detail of the Word, but now they close their Bibles. It is because they have a personal controversy with heaven. You see, the children of Joseph had a controversy with Joshua, which incidentally, as a reminder, it is Joshua is the Hebrew name for the Greek name Jesus. Though it is not Jesus Christ in the book of Joshua, it is Joshua the son of Nun. But there are great similitudes in the actions of the two. But the point that I want to make here presently is this, that those who have a controversy with heaven will always suffer more than heaven. Who has hardened his heart against the Lord and prospered, Job asked. Actually, in the Hebrew, it's who has hardened his heart against God and has been safe? It is a rhetorical question. None have. And so our intention as a ministry, as those who disciple others is to strengthen the flock by feeding the flock, and by feeding the flock is led.
You've been listening to Cross Reference Radio, the daily radio ministry of Pastor Rick Gaston, Calvary Chapel in Mechanicsville, Virginia. As we mentioned at the beginning of today's broadcast, today's teaching is available free of charge at our website. Simply log on to www.crossreferenceradio.com. That's crossreferenceradio.com. We'd also like to encourage you to subscribe to the Cross Reference Radio podcast. Subscribing ensures that you stay current with all the latest teachings from Pastor Rick. You can subscribe at crossreferenceradio.com or simply search for Cross Reference Radio in iTunes. Tune in next time as Pastor Rick continues sharing this in-depth study here on Cross Reference Radio.